Hi, I'm Dan Slepian, investigative producer for Dateline, and you're about to hear a clip from the second episode of my new podcast, Letters from Sing Sing. It's a story about a man convicted of murder, his fight for justice, and how the letters he sent me sparked a 20-year investigation that changed both of our lives and the lives of so many others. To hear this and more episodes, search for Letters from Sing Sing wherever you're listening, and make sure to follow the podcast.
There's some family pictures, school papers that I've kept. He always got very good grades. This is excellent. He loved dinosaurs. He did a dinosaur project. And you could see that he was such a happy person, always with the smiles and the laughter and friends. He had a lot of friends.
I'm with Maria Velasquez, JJ's mother. She's showing me his childhood drawings, old report cards, photos of JJ when he was a kid.
I used to feel like a taxi driver, running them to the movies, running them to shows, running them all over the place. Because he always, oh, mom will take you, mom will take you. And I wind up like with five or six boys in my car, driving them to the movies, taking them bowling, doing all kinds of things, you know?
This is one of my favorites.
Maria lives in Havistraw, a town in New York on the Hudson River. Directly across the water is Sing Sing, the maximum security prison where her son is locked up. Maria pulls out another set of photos. These look more recent. In them, JJ's older.
When we go to the FRPs, the Family Reunion Project, we always take pictures.
The program that Maria is describing lets incarcerated people with good behavior visit with their families for a couple of nights in a trailer on prison grounds.
We've celebrated birthdays, my birthday, his birthday, Mother's Day, Father's Day, all on FRPs.
She tells me that she always tries to spend the major holidays, like Thanksgiving and Christmas, with her son.
There's no gifts, there's no tree, you know, what we're used to, but I've gone outdoors and picked a little bush and come inside and put little things on it and made a tree out of it. And we've always managed to just keep the family going no matter what.
But my reason for coming to see Maria went beyond just hearing stories about JJ's past. He insisted he had proof he didn't murder Al Ward, the retired police officer. He told me that he had an alibi.
I have always felt so grateful to have known where my son was when they said that he was someplace else. I've shed many tears, but not because my son is a murderer. My son is not a murderer. He is not. And I know because I know where he was. He was on the phone with me.
I'm Dan Slepian, and this is Letters from Sing Sing. Episode 2, 74 minutes. JJ Velasquez was an only child raised by two working parents in the Bronx. His mother, Maria, was a labor union organizer, and his dad was a police officer for Amtrak. They separated when JJ was 11, and his father had another son. Maria says JJ was a good kid. He played soccer and baseball, was an altar boy at their church, and he was on the right track at school.
He was very active in school. The high school that was closest to us had a law program. And so I took him over to the school to get him interviewed for the program. And it just so happens that I had to go outside and put money in the meter. And by the time I got back, the law professor had already interviewed him and said, he's in. He liked the way he expressed himself. And he was just, charismatic. People are drawn to him when he speaks. He's always been like that.
When JJ was about 16, things began to change. He began to change.
Got to high school and I started spreading my wings a little bit. Got exposed a little bit more to life, a little more freedom. Came a little hard-headed. Wanted to be seen as a cool individual. I was into sports, so I had to hold up some type of image.
He kind of like just started letting loose and just started, you know, hanging out with the boys and just not paying attention to school. And the only class that he did well in was his law class. And the professor said, you know, he does really well in this class, but I'm not going to pass him if he doesn't do well in his other classes. When he was about 16, I sent him to live with his father. His father lived in Manhattan. And I figured maybe, you know, living with his father would help him, you know, through these issues. And instead, I think what happened was that it got worse.
My parents offered me something better, but I was rebellious and I wanted my own way. You know, I wanted to be able to tell myself what to do. I thought I was grown.
JJ dropped out of high school and started selling drugs.
I sold weed. I sold coke. I was in the street. I was by myself. I ran away from home. Not because of anything that my parents did, just me trying to find my way. Where I come from, the working class people are struggling, barely paying their bills. I don't live around doctors, lawyers. They're not from my neighborhood. They're drug dealers. I'm hanging out on the street, having fun, partying with girls, driving nice cars, have nice clothes. So growing up, it's almost like you see that success is the image of these drug dealers. And I wasn't very successful in it. You know, but that was my life.
During those years, JJ had a few run-ins with the police. He'd been arrested for drug possession, but had never been convicted. Even so, his mugshot remained in the police database. When he was 17, JJ met Vanessa Sapero, who lived in his neighborhood. They started dating, and 2 years later, Vanessa got pregnant. They named their baby boy John.
My son was born in Union Hospital in the Bronx, and it gave me new meaning. It gave me a sense of purpose. I knew now that I had to live for him. But still, where was I? How was I going to pull it off?
So JJ enrolled in classes at a technical career institute. But at night to make money, he continued to sell drugs on a street corner. A few years after their first son, John, was born, JJ and Vanessa had another baby, Jacob. On the morning of January 27th, 1998, the day of Al Ward's murder, JJ says he was at home in the Bronx with Vanessa and his two boys. Jacob had been born just 5 weeks earlier.
I woke up early, entertained my oldest son, who was up, jovial, running around, you know, looking for attention. So I give him the attention that he wants. You know, I make breakfast.
Later that morning, JJ says he got on the phone with his mom, Maria. They had something to discuss about the next day, January 28th.
January 28th is my father's birthday. And he died April 1997. So this would be the first time that my father's birthday would come around and we wouldn't spend it with him.
It was something that was hard, you know, for my son. He was an only child. He was always very close to his father.
He was more than my father. He was my best friend. You know, like he was the spark. He's the one who got everybody together, knew what was going on with everybody. I wanted to continue being that staple in the family that my father was. I wanted to take his place. I wanted our family to be together, you know?
So during that call, JJ says he told his mom he wanted to gather his family at his father's gravesite the next day. And he wanted the two most important women in his life to be there, Maria and Vanessa. The problem was, the two of them had been fighting. They weren't speaking to each other.
So I was torn between them. I was trying to let them know that at this time, I need your support. You both have to come. Now, Vanessa was like, you know, I don't want to be around her, but I'll go, but I'm not talking to her, you know? Well, my mother's, you know, that's my mom's. You can't tell her anything. You don't tell me what to do, man. So we had a long conversation because I kept, you know, trying to instill in her how important it was.
JJ remembers the conversation getting heated.
It was a tug of war. It was me against her, you know.
We spoke a long time on the phone. A long time.
We went back and forth for a while, but she finally agreed.
The next day, JJ says they all headed to a cemetery in the Bronx. But when they got there, the gates were locked.
And I remember being there in the clouds and it was starting to rain. And I wanted to climb over the fence just to go see my father. You know, and my mother was like, it's not worth it. You can get caught for trespassing and whatever. We'll come back. The sad part about it is I never had that chance to go back.
3 days later, JJ would get a call and learn the police were looking for him. Maria would scramble to find a lawyer. They'd spend the weekend holed up in a hotel. And then she'd drive her son to the 28th precinct in Harlem.
I can't forget how I felt. It was like I had betrayed my son by turning him into the police. I let out this scream. It was such a loud scream. And I stood there for a few minutes. And then I just left and started to head home.
As Maria was driving home, she says she started thinking about the day of the crime, trying to remember what she had been doing, what JJ had been doing. And then she remembered that long, heated phone call with him.
I got home and immediately I started, you know, calling the phone company. I requested my phone bills. I called Vanessa. I told her, you have to call the phone company. We need to put all this information together and we need to get it to the lawyer as soon as possible because this is what's going to prove where he was.
All this time, Maria still didn't know what was happening with her son. He'd been at the precinct for hours. And she still hadn't heard from JJ or his lawyer.
That day was like the longest day. Not knowing, not hearing anything. And when I finally heard, it was that they had kept my son. And I couldn't believe it. I was told that he would probably be in Rikers.
Rikers is New York City's massive jail complex where people who have been arrested wait for their day in court. It's considered one of the most horrific and dangerous jails in the country.
I was so worried and heard so many stories about Rikers and how terrible a place it is and all the things that happen in there. So I was very concerned that they would hurt him, especially that he was being accused of murdering a retired police officer.
She kept pushing the phone company for records, and eventually she got them.
We got the phone records, and we saw that we had been on the phone that whole time.
Here's what the records show. A 74-minute phone call made on a landline. This was before everyone had a cell phone. The call was from JJ and Vanessa's apartment in the Bronx to Maria's home in Haverstraw, overlapping with the time the robbery was unfolding in Harlem.
Once we got that phone record, we said it's all a matter of just going in there and proving where you were, and you're going to be a free man.
Maria was certain that with these phone records, no jury would convict JJ. To hear the rest of this episode and other episodes in this podcast, go to the link in the description of this clip or search for Letters from Sing Sing and follow the podcast. I hope you do.